Alrighty, enough of all that. Here, I'm curious, how many of you like to fly? Oh, I love it. Anybody not like to fly? Okay, and that's fine. I sat by someone who didn't like to fly, and it was I was torn because on the one hand I was trying to be comforting, and the other hand I was a little amused because they were just the way that they were scared. It was comical. But and then it was over before they knew it, and they were still scared. I'm like, hey, you're fine. We're down. What's good? She goes, that's it. Yep, that's it. We're good. One thing that I will never cease to be amazed at, though, is especially like flying into LAX. As you're flying in, has anybody ever looked and seen how many planes are in the air with you at the same time? You know, and living in LA, you know, you would see that. They would be stacked up. You could just see them like a train of planes going out as far as you can see. And in my world, I grew up, my dad, I mentioned a lot that my dad was in the Navy, but what I probably never mention is he was an aviator. He was in the naval aviation side. So we always lived on air bases. So even as a kid, when we lived in the Philippines, we were on a base that was only a mile square. And something we used to love to do is sneak onto the runway. Not when planes are taking off or anything, but we would sneak out there and walk around all the planes. And I was just fascinated by that all the time. But being on a mile square base, anytime a plane was coming up on and off, you could see it. I mean, it felt like you could touch them because they were right there. So I thought I'd share a couple clips with you. This actually is in London, one of the airports in London. It's of course a time lapse video, but it's showing all these planes come in and land. I just thought that was interesting. And then this is Dubai. Just again, it's time lapse, but look at the busyness of this place. Isn't that insane? Have you ever wondered how all that works? How do they get them all in, you know, at one time or another? Again, my dad, being that he was a naval aviator or into aviation in the Navy, I had the opportunity a lot of times to be in the control tower of ships and then airports. And it was fascinating to always watch how that all goes down. But I'll tell you what's even better. Does anybody know what this is? Yeah, it's a cockpit of a plane. I think I've mentioned this before, but when I was in high school, there was this guy in our church who was a private pilot. And he was a wonderful guy. He had kids who were younger. In fact, years later when I was a youth pastor, his kids were in my youth group. But when he was a pilot, when I was in high school, he was a private pilot. So what he would do a lot of times is he would get contracted to fly different planes. And so he would need to test them out. And it seemed like a lot of times that would be a Monday thing. So he would test them on Sunday. So there was quite a few times, I mean, 8, 12, 15 times, where he would tap me on a shoulder on a Sunday night and say, want to go fly? What do you think I said? Yeah. And, you know, he would have always checked with my parents. And he and I were really close. He was our softball coach and pitcher, and he did a lot with us. I mean, I knew him really well. So he'd say, hey, you want to go fly? Well, yeah. So I had the opportunity in high school to be in a lot of these cockpits. And it was fascinating because he would also, of course, you know, let me fly. So in case you're not familiar with that, typically the number one pilot would sit on the left and then the co-pilot would be on the right. And a lot of these planes, that's a very small cockpit, by the way. But what is so fascinating about it is all the different levers and the different things and what they do. But there would be a lot of times we'd be flying over San Diego or over the bay or out in the middle of nowhere or something. And then he would let me take over the controls and fly. And it was, I loved it. I loved every minute of it. It was so much fun. One thing that was really kind of disorienting at first is, see those pedals on the bottom? Does anybody know what they do? I mean, you wouldn't think that a plane would have pedals. I mean, what would they be for? It can't be a brake per se. But what they do is, let me just show you this real quick. If you look at this diagram over here, what those pedals typically do is usually on a smaller plane, I've never flown a plane like that, but up on the top, those rudders, that rudder number two, see that right there? That's usually what those pedals do. So they turn the plane, but there's a lot of ways to turn a plane. Because the steering wheel, wouldn't really be a wheel, but the steering wheel, we call it, actually controls the flaps and the ailerons, and that can also turn the plane. But this guy, being that he was a pilot and he had to test out a plane, he would do the craziest stuff up there, not to be crazy, but he had to know what the plane would do. So I can't tell you how many times we'd be flying and he'd say, okay, we're going to fly sideways right now. I mean, you know planes can do that? It's crazy. I mean, literally, we're flying in the air like this, flying like this, and then he would turn the plane and we're completely sideways, flying sideways. It was the most it was just so disorienting because you're still looking out the front, but he's flying totally sideways. Or, you know, a lot of times, depending on what they're doing, I mean, he would just tip the plane this way. Now, he would never do stunts or anything. These planes weren't like that. I've never done anything like that. But just as far as, you know, up, down, nose down, I mean, and then the landings. And then, you know, a lot of smaller planes, you know, he would let me take off or land because, I mean, he's really controlling the whole thing. And if I messed anything up, he would do it, of course. But it was an amazing, amazing experience. But here's one thing that always was, you know, we'd wear this headphones. And in my headphones, constantly, I would be hearing the control tower, constantly. And I would never say anything. In fact, most of the time, I'd turn my mic away just in case I said something. Because, I mean, they wouldn't know what, I mean, I wouldn't know what to say, and they wouldn't expect to hear something from me. But Art, his name was Art, he would be in constant contact with them, finding out when he could take off, finding out when he could land, finding about the air conditions, what other planes are in the air. And he would have to file a flight plan, so he'd have to know where he was going, just in case, you know, there was another plane in the area so that they wouldn't collide or anything like that. Visibility was an issue. Altitude was an issue. You know, there were times where we would fly quite a ways away, and you could hear this. It would be a ping. And what it is you would come up to another transponder that these things are placed all around the country, and it would tell us exactly where we are. There were times where he would do instrument landings, or he would do the whole thing. It was crazy. Now, I never flew with him in the fog or storms or very far out in the ocean, but for a pilot to do all that, they have to be in contact with that control tower. What I want to do is just use that as an example for our lives, because most of the time we have a control tower, right? But a lot of times we don't really choose who's in that tower. And there's times where we might have somebody in the tower who's not really the person we should be getting control from. Because sometimes we're in the control tower, aren't we? And we're the ones that are trying to tell us what to do, and we're not the best for that. Or maybe it's somebody else. Or I know there have been times as I would talk to Art about flying, because there were times where I knew he had to fly no matter what the weather conditions, you know, depending on what the job was. And I'd ask him, how are you going to fly tomorrow? Because San Diego doesn't get a lot of bad weather, but there's times where you might have a cloud bank come in and you literally cannot see. And there were times where he and I would be flying and he would ask me, where do you think we are? And what he would have done, he did this to me a number of times, where he would tip the plane in a certain weird angle and we would be in a cloud and I would tell him where I thought we were, and we'd come out of the cloud, I was totally wrong, and we were totally sideways. And I didn't know. How could I have gotten so disoriented? The problem is, he was flying and had control of all the instruments, and he knew what he was doing, of course, and I didn't. But then the other thing is, it's so easy to get off track. And in a plane like this, when you're traveling at those kind of speeds, the fact is, you can go really wrong really fast. And in our lives, there's so many things that do that and cloud us up and get us really out of sync with what we're doing. And it becomes so difficult to have an idea of what's going on. I mean, there's times where there's people in our church right now who are experiencing loss. And I know that there's a couple families who are on the verge of that. And even as I talk to them, you can tell that cloud is coming in and there's that opportunity or the danger of disorientation. And you wonder who's in the control tower that's going to help them guide that and hopefully land. There's times when your family's in chaos and things are happening as the family's falling apart. I did get an opportunity to visit with a lot of friends and people I hadn't seen in many years. And as we all do, you know, what do? You sit down and you try to catch up, right? And there's times where I know people and I know their families, and I would ask, well, how's your brother doing? How's your sister? How's this? And I'm looking, I want to hear good things, right? Sometimes they're not. And I remember distinctly talking to a few people where the answers were very sad and the families are completely out of control. And things that are happening just breaks your heart, whether it's divorce or whether it's kids not serving the Lord or on drugs or whatever. There's times where you talk to people in the jobs, their job has fallen apart. There's times you talk to people and maybe they've lost their sense of identity or their own independence, or maybe it's a natural disaster or an illness, or maybe their kids move back in. I talked to a friend of mine who's not much older than me, but his kids have already moved back in with him, and it's completely disoriented their world and their life. Talk to people who are, you know, looking at surgery, or maybe there's deep, deep disappointments. as you think about those things, some of the things that occurred to me, this verse kept coming to my mind as I was talking to some friends of mine. It's just that hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a dream fulfilled is a tree of life. Even as I was talking to people, you know, and you hear, and as they talk, they talk about perhaps some dreams that didn't turn out quite like they intended. And you think about that and how sick the heart can get. So when you're stuck in the clouds, and when you're disoriented, and when you're in confusion, and when life is in chaos, and disappointment overwhelms, what do? Where's the control tower? I don't know if you ever heard this story. You heard the story about this guy who kind of fell off a cliff, and he barely grabbed onto a branch. Have you heard this? And as he's holding onto the branch, he starts yelling out, "Anybody, anybody, is there anybody who can help me?" He doesn't hear anything for the longest time. Then he hears this voice, and the voice says, "This is God." And he goes, "Okay, okay, can you help me?" And God says, "Let go." And he says, "Anybody else up there?" Because most often we kind of have an idea of how we think things should work out. And when they start to not work out the way we think, we kind of get disoriented. The thing about a control tower is we sometimes in life have an illusion of control. Have you noticed that? But it's usually just an illusion. And we can control a few things here and there. And we may be even able to control our own reactions to things and our own emotions. But ultimately, a lot of the control that we think we have, we don't really have in the first place. So I want to give us at least a plan and an idea about what to do when the control tower isn't quite what we had in mind. Let me give you, just take a look at that one more time. You look in this control tower, there's a lot of people in there. And when I first looked at this picture, it was kind of freaky because I was thinking, oh my gosh, that plane's going to hit. But guess what? It's not going to hit. Someone in that control tower knows exactly where that plane is, where it should be, and where it needs to be. And the fact is, you do have somebody, and hopefully you have the right person in that control tower. So let's take a look at a couple of these things. Let's look at Psalms. First of all, Psalm 25. Show me the right path, O Lord. Point out the road for me to follow. That's what you need in your control tower. Lead me by your truth and teach me, for you are the God who saves me. All day long I put my hope in you. All day long. All day long I put my hope in you. He goes on to say, remember, O Lord, your compassion and unfailing love, which you have shown from long ages past. The Lord is good and does what is right. He shows the proper path to those who go astray. He leads the humble in doing right, teaching them his way. As we read this verse, I wish it was more like, I'm reading this, and I'm also remembering my friend Art and hearing him on there, on that, you know, he's holding the steering wheel and he's talking to the tower and he's asking them where to go. And I remember him asking specifically one time we were landing at the San Diego airport. I mean, most of the time we'd take off from some little tiny, you know, private airports, but then he would land at the big one and then we'd go back to another one. And I remember him distinctly, we were landing at the big San Diego airport, and I remember him asking which runway to land on. And then at the last minute, they changed his runway. But he was ready for that, and he was listening, and it was seamless. He just switched runways. And then the tower said something like, you know, thank you, and they called out his call numbers of the plane, and then they said something about that. And then he said, did you see what happened there? He said, and he pointed out, I didn't even see it, but there was another plane coming in that wasn't responding quick enough, so they changed him, and then that plane, I mean, it's amazing. And so often in our lives, it's like that, where you can't see what's going on, but we serve a God who loves you so much, and he knows what's happening, and he knows the right way you should go. Let's read this again. Show me the right path, O Lord. Point out the road for me to follow. Lead me by your truth and teach me, for you are the God who saves me. All day long I put my hope in you. Remember, O Lord, your compassion and unfailing love, which you have shown from long ages past. The Lord is good, and he does what is right. He shows the proper path to those who go astray. He leads the humble in doing right, teaching them his way. Can you imagine what would happen is if at one of these big airports that somebody somehow messed up and messed with the air traffic controllers and started giving the planes the wrong coordinates or the wrong altitudes or any of that? Can you imagine the destruction that would happen? But we serve a good God. We serve a God who loves us and cares for us. Here's the thing. You got to look for his guidance. You've got to look for his guidance. You have to do that. This last 2 weeks ago, we had VBS here at the church, and it's so much fun. I love it. I love being around the kids. I always do the games. It's been years and years of doing the games for kids, and I love it. What was funny is before one of the days, as we were getting ready to run, or get ready to run our games, some of the kids, they were kind of the next to the oldest group of kids, and they come in and they're really excited and they're amped up and they're ready to go, and two of the boys were playing what they called blind tag. Can you imagine? What they were doing is running around with their eyes closed in the gym, which is safe if you're in the middle of the gym. But there's kids in there. We had a volleyball net set up. And right away, we saw what they're doing, and we stopped them. But can you imagine? Can you imagine just running with your eyes closed or blindfolded? But isn't that what we do? So often, we do that with our own lives, where we're running around, and we don't even realize the danger we're in. And these guys are like, what? We're just having fun. And what's so weird about it is they didn't have blindfolds on or anything like that. They just shut their eyes and ran. Even as I'm saying it, it kind of scares me. Can you imagine doing that? Just shutting your eyes, and they were running full speed. Because for them, the gym is just this big, wide open place, and they felt very safe to just run. But it's not safe, because there's kids running around, and you don't know what those other kids are going to do. And they didn't know we had they saw it, but they didn't even think about the fact that we had this net set up and poles set up. Had they run into that, can you imagine them catching their little chins on that net? Oh, my goodness. We were their control tower that day because they weren't using their eyes. They weren't looking. Have you ever seen anybody try to run backward? I'm serious. I mean, we used to do that in football all the time, run backward. I mean, that was a drill we'd do. But you'd always turn around and look, right, to see where you were running. I mean, no one in their right mind would just run backward and not look. I mean, first of all, when you're running backward, you know, you're not very stable in the first place, and any little thing is going to trip you up, and when you go down, you're going to go down hard. But a lot of times, we don't look. We just rely on our own. Here's the next thing we need to do. We always need to do. Your own ears will hear him. Right behind you, a voice will say, this is the way you should go, whether to the right or to the left. I heard this again this last week in talking with some people, you know, and ministers, maybe you're the worst about this. Well, the Lord said, or I heard the Lord say, or I felt God lead. And there's so many times where I can remember either young people or adults. I remember there was a man who used to sit right in that second seat, that right there on the edge. And one week after a Wednesday night service, he came up and he said, I've been around church a long time, but I haven't come to church regularly till this church, and I don't understand when people say, God spoke to me. What do they mean? Do you all hear voices? He was serious as a heart attack. He said, do you all hear voices? Am I just not hearing them yet? Am I going to hear them? He was really serious. And I said to him, I said, I've never heard a voice per se, but I have heard God speak to me either by an impression in my spirit or in my mind, or I've had him drop a thought in my mind that I didn't think of. It wouldn't have been something I would have normally thought, but a thought came to my mind that wasn't mine. And he kind of looked at me, and I thought, I was trying to listen to what I said. You know how you say stuff later, and you're like, that sounds crazy. But it's true. And he said, okay, so you have thoughts in your mind that you didn't think? I said, well, not all the time, but there's been times where that had happened. And I went to some of the places while I was in Southern California just because I felt like I needed to go to some of the places where I knew God spoke to me about certain things, or places where routinely I would go and pray and seek to hear from him. For that, any of that to happen, you have to listen. You have to be willing to hear his voice. Let's go here. 1 Kings 19:11. Go out and stand before me. This is God speaking to Elijah. The Lord told him, and Elijah stood there as the Lord passed by, and a mighty windstorm hit the mountain. It was such a terrible blast that the rocks were torn loose, but the Lord was not in the wind. This story right here is an amazing story, because if you know about Elijah, he was a prophet that God used in very mighty ways. And in this particular story, he had told evil King Ahab and his wife Jezebel that it would not rain for years. And it didn't rain for 3 years. But then when it did rain, and he called down fire, and he had this big showdown with the prophets of Baal, and they were all killed, and all of this happened, Elijah came to a point where he was so disillusioned, because things didn't happen the way he thought they would happen. And what's amazing about this story is the Bible says that he ties up his robe and he runs like 40 miles ahead of the chariot. It's an amazing thing. And then he's so depressed and disillusioned, he goes up to this cave and he's pouting. And God speaks to him. But he doesn't speak to him like this. He doesn't speak to him in a mighty windstorm like we evidently were having a minute ago. And a terrible blast that tears the rocks loose. The Lord wasn't in the wind. And this is the guy who called fire down from heaven. He saw God do things. Here's what I'm trying to get to you in this. God has probably spoken to different ones of you in different ways. Now, God has spoken in Scripture. We see it all the time that he speaks, but you know, he spoke to Moses out of a burning bush. He spoke to Peter in a vision. And in that vision, he saw a sheet let down, and it changed everything, because in the sheet, there were animals that the Jews were not supposed to eat. And God told Peter, kill and eat. And he did it three times. And Peter finally got the message, and he said, there's a man coming to your door right now. Do not hesitate to go with him. And that man happened to be a Gentile, and the Jews weren't supposed to associate with Gentiles. Peter went with him, and he realized that God didn't care about the Jews and the Gentiles and ethnicities and race, that it was for everybody. He spoke to him, though, through a vision. So amazing how God does. But a lot of times we assume he's going to speak the same way he spoke before, and he doesn't always do that. And that with Elijah, he had spoken to him, and he'd heard his voice, no doubt, in different ways, but this time it wasn't going to be in a mighty windstorm. And then it says here, after the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And I don't know if Elijah had heard him speak in an earthquake before, but I think what God is trying to show is that it doesn't have to be a big show. And after the earthquake, there was fire, which he had spoke with fire before. And then the Lord was not in the fire, but after the fire, there was the sound of a gentle whisper. The King James says, a still small voice, a gentle whisper. My point is that God speaks, and we have to listen. You have to listen to hear his voice. Most of the time when we're disillusioned and caught up in a storm, or when we're flying blind or running in the gym with our eyes closed, we're not really listening. We're not listening. We're not trying to hear what he's trying to say to us. And maybe we're busy, or maybe we're caught up in the emotion of the moment, or we're so frustrated, nothing else matters, and we're not listening. And because we're not listening, we're not going to hear, and we may be listening for something that he's not using to speak to us that time. I've had him speak through Scripture probably the most often, where I'm reading a passage of Scripture and it's not as if it's highlighted or glows or anything weird like that. I've never been one to open a Bible and stick my finger in and have God speak. It's not like that. As I'm reading Scripture, there's times where I'll read something and then I'll be like, wait a minute, what did that say? And I read it again and I feel like God is saying, this is for you today. That's what he does. I've never had a dream that he spoke to me through, but I'm open to that. I'm just saying that's never happened to me. This is an interesting scripture in 2 Corinthians 12:2. This is Paul. He says, I was caught up into the third heaven 14 years ago. Whether I was in my body or not, I don't know. Only God knows. And he had a vision. In some versions, it says there was a man who was caught up. And what the Bible scholars tell us is that he was talking about himself in the third person here, and that's why the New Living Translation translates it this way, based on the tense there. I'm wondering, though, how do you hear his voice? I don't know how you hear it. The key is that you listen for it, especially when you're in a confusing time. If you're not listening to the control tower, you can't follow their instructions. You just can't. You just can't. This verse is one of those life verses. I was in high school and our youth group was doing something for the service. Like, we were putting on the service. You guys know how that goes sometimes. In fact, our youth are going to be doing that in October. I'm really looking forward to that. And this was the verse I was going to quote. So I remember learning this verse to quote it. And that particular Sunday, this was a Sunday night service we were doing this for. We were playing football on a Sunday afternoon, and I tore my ACL with the guys on a Sunday afternoon. I didn't get to quote my verse. This verse. I've thought about this verse a million times. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all you do, and he will show you which path to take. For this to work, you've got to trust him. I think again back to my friend Art, and I think again about how he was talking about how, because I was asking him, how do you fly in fog and bad weather? And he said, there are times that all you have are the instruments on your panel and the voice of that guy in the tower. And he said, you have to trust him. I can see his lips saying that. Because I remember thinking, I don't think I ever want to do that, ever. I never want to have to trust somebody to that degree. In fact, I told him, I said, I don't think I'd ever fly unless it was just clear weather. And he said, well, a lot of people do that. You have to be instrument trained to get your license, but a lot of people never, ever will fly that way because it's just too scary. I thought about that, and I've been thinking about that with this. It's scary to trust, isn't it? Isn't it? I mean, it's hard enough to trust people we can see. I mean, who do you trust? Who do you trust? Who will never fail you? Who do you know who will always come through? They will always come through on their commitments. They'll always be on time. And if they're late, you know they had a flat because they're never late. You know people like that. Who will carry you when you're weary? Who will correct you in love? Who do you know who will challenge your assumptions and hold your feet to the fire when that needs to happen? Who do you know who will uphold you and support you? It's a scary thing to trust because I know as we were landing that night, that particular night, and he was getting the instructions from the tower, all I could think about is, it seems so scary to me. But if you're going to trust, you need to trust him all the time. When it's fair weather and cloudy weather, if it's foggy or not, if it's chaos or confusing or not, you have to trust him. If he's really going to direct your life, then you need to trust him. Even when you're tired, even when it's a difficult time, even when you've been wronged, even when you feel like you're entitled to be treated differently, you need to trust him. Psalm 40 says, I waited patiently for the Lord to help me. And he turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walked along. He has given me a new song to sing, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see what he has done and be amazed, and they will put their trust in the Lord. You have to trust him. And when you trust him and see what he's done in you, then they will trust him. As I was working on this sermon, I was just having music play, and this song played, and then I don't know why, but it kept playing. It was just a weird glitch thing where it's supposed to be a random thing, and it just played a few times, and then it was one of those things where I felt like I said, are you trying to tell me something? Because I wasn't listening the first two times, and I don't think every word of this song fits this for sure, but a lot of it does. Here's what I'd like you to do. I don't know who of you or if any of you are in a place right now where you're struggling with this. It could be any of those three things. It could be maybe you're struggling to look. You haven't been looking. Maybe you don't listen or haven't been listening. Or maybe it's the trust part and where you're at and what you're walking through. It's difficult for you to trust. I want to tell you, I understand that, and my heart goes out to you. But I just want to affirm to you, he's someone you can trust. And he loves you and he cares about you. So as you listen to the song, I mean, the words are on there. It's just kind of graphics of a cloud. It's not like anything really to look at. But if you want to read the words, or if you just want to shut your eyes and listen to them, here's what I'm going to invite you to do. What'll happen is we'll listen to the song, but I'm going to pray for you first. And that'll be a closing for the service tonight. And then Dave will put some music on. And if you need to spend some more time talking through these issues, if you have some of these trust issues, or maybe some the wrong person, or maybe it's been you in the tower, whatever it is for you, I just want you to let God speak to you through this song.
Come So lay down your burdens, lay down your shame. Oh, I'm broken. Lift up your face. Oh, wanderer, come home. You're not too far. So lay down your hurt, lay down your heart, come as you are. There's hope for the hopeless and all those who've strayed. Come sit at the table, come taste the grace. There's rest for the weary, rest that endures. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can't cure. So lay down your burdens, lay down your shame. Oh, I'm broken. Lift up your face. Lay down your burdens, lay down.